It's now a 13-point lead for Max Verstappen as we head into a more into the more Red Bull-centric circuits of the season, with all to play for heading into the Mexico City Grand Prix. Welcome back to the Grid Talk podcast. Hosting today will be me, Owen Medford, and joining me are sports journalist Louis Edwards.
Hello.
Ray from Everyday Motorsport, sorry. And Tom Horrocks, co-host of the Monkey Seat podcast. Today, obviously, we're going to be previewing the Mexico City Grand Prix. But before that, just you're along with if you're watching, but if you are listening along after the fact, we're now streaming the show live on YouTube. So be sure to like our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Formula One Grid Talk, and ring the bell icon so that you're notified of future shows. So I think I'll start with you, Louis. Going into, obviously, we've just come off the back of what was going to look like it was going to be a fairly dominant, at least on the Friday, it looked like it was going to be a dominant Mercedes performance. And Red Bull just completely turned it on. And it almost feels like, at least to me, that it's kind of, you know, it's theirs to lose now when it comes to Red Bull. Do you think that's the case?
Yeah, I think it is kind of swinging to that case. I think not a lot of us expected Red Bull to win in the US. It looked like a place where Mercedes would appear to be a bit more dominant. And as you said on Friday, it definitely looked that case. But it didn't turn out. Red Bull pulled it out of the bag. Max Verstappen did a great job. And now we've got a 13-point gap in the championship going into two races, which you would very much argue are Red Bull favourable, especially this weekend in Mexico. Max Verstappen, I think he's already won this. He has already won this Grand Prix, I think it's twice. So it does look like it is very much, advantage Red Bull. And yeah, does that mean he has one hand maybe already on the championship? It could possibly mean that he does. Because it's going to take a lot for Mercedes to claw that advantage back. But with the way that the season's gone, it's up in the open. You know, anything can happen. We've still got grid penalties we're talking about, potential, you know, engine changes that could be crashes. It could be anything that could happen to completely turn this championship on its head once again. So while it may seem on paper like Red Bull have got this, in reality, it's still very much wide open.
Yeah, 100% agree. The crashes are, you know, there could be crashes of reliability, and we're really coming to a head on that, where the teams are just pushing everything as close as they can. If we move on to you, Ray, for sort of looking at the Mercedes sort of thing, when it comes to Hamilton, he's sort of shown, I think it's almost, he's, you know, he's in the class of two with Verstappen, because they, you know, as we saw in the USA, they just drove away from everyone. Even Perez in a competitive Red Bull couldn't stay with them whatsoever, which probably interrupted their strategy. Do you think maybe it's almost a bit of a shock for Mercedes to have to deal with this kind of competition this late in the season?
I think it's Mercedes to do. I don't think Mercedes actually expected it, you know, for Red Bull to be this strong from the beginning for the 2021 season. I think they really surpassed the expectation. And yeah, I think for this kind of competition to be so intense between two teams, it's quite surprising, because for so long, the turbo hybrid era, it's always been a one-horse race, Mercedes from start to finish, and maybe occasionally we had Ferrari in 2017, 2018. But yeah, I think it's definitely a bit of a shock for Mercedes to actually have competition this strong for the first time in the turbo hybrid era, especially in the last year of this rule cycle, before we go on to a new rule cycle for 2022.
Yeah, it almost seems that everyone's caught up just as Mercedes are moving on. And Tom, we'll go with you for Bottas. He's kind of the only person keeping Mercedes ahead in the constructors, really, because obviously Perez is bringing the fight, but it's just kind of, you know, the fact that he's looked sort of underwhelming, I'd say, the last few races, but he's kind of in third place, keeping the constructors alive, and just genuinely making things difficult for Red Bull in that respect. Would you say he's gonna? Do you see the Mexico race sort of coming to him a bit more you know, it's kind of a track that's similar to what he likes in terms of sort of, you know, those stops. It's kind of a Sochi-esque track in some ways. Or do you see it maybe just being, again, a bit more of the Hamilton show?
Well, it makes a change for Bottas to be keeping anyone ahead. Normally, he's the one letting them through and just waving them through. It's an interesting situation, really, with this circuit, in that it's obviously known to favour Red Bull. But I know Red Bull haven't always had a car capable of winning, and yet they have managed to win. They won in 17 and 18. But Mercedes have still won the other 3 years here. It's only ever been Mercedes or Red Bull. So, and Lewis Hamilton has won here twice. So it's not like it's a bogey track for Lewis. And he has, even when he hasn't won here, he has won the World Championship here twice as well. So it's actually been a very successful circuit for Lewis Hamilton. But back to your question about Valtteri Bottas. I don't think he's never really shown that he's had anything in reserve ahead of Hamilton on this track, so I don't think he's going to factor so much. And I think a lot of what was benefiting him on his run to form, a lot of that was down to grid penalties for others and retirements for others as well. So I don't see that his this cat is just being crazy. He's heard me talking. He's decided now is the time to just go and interrupt.
I've come to you at exactly the wrong time. I'm really sorry. I'll let you deal with that. There he is.
He's on my lap now, so I can keep him under control. So Valtteri, I think a lot of him keeping Mercedes in the constructors' battle is not really down to his form. I think it's down to Perez's lack of form. Bottas has been where he should be for some of the season, whereas Perez has been where he should be for less of the season, and that's the difference. And I think that now that Perez seems to have got to grips with things, he had a good performance despite being a long way off at the last race. He still had a good performance. He seems to be the number two driver currently in form for me. So Bottas needs to be up there with Hamilton. It would be helpful if he could go two races without an engine penalty, to be fair to him. But Bottas is not great in traffic, we know that. So if he can qualify well in the top four and stay there, then he'll be in the conversation and will be within the tactics for Mercedes to try and get something positive out of this race. But I don't think the championship's over. I do think Red Bull do have the advantage despite not being ahead in the constructors, but being ahead in the drivers. And I think they've got the leverage and they've got the form and they've got the pace. So it does put them in the advantage. But I do think that Mercedes are still, you know, they're in that kind of 45% chance, whereas Red Bull are in the 55% chance. So there's not a lot in it at all. But Bottas needs to perform to stay up there to give Mercedes those strategy options.
Yeah, it's an important point you make there, that obviously having the second driver when you've got someone like, you know, Verstappen or Hamilton in the car is mighty important. That seems something that Red Bull just couldn't sort of act on, really, just because, honestly, because Perez wasn't fast enough, Louis, in the USA. Do you think sort of maybe a home advantage and, you know, being a bit more buoyed up, you know, he's got a podium, you know, he's getting closer and closer to an eventual race win. Do you think he could maybe pull that out of the bag this weekend?
I think a race win may be a little too far. You know, we've talked about how good both Lewis and Max are around this track. I think it's going to be a bit of a push for Perez to maybe conquer all in his home Grand Prix. And even if he is maybe ahead of Max in, like, say, a 1-2, realistically, Red Bull are going to favour Max in terms of the Drivers' Championship, get as many points over Lewis as possible, which will, of course, be a shame for Checo in his home race. But we're talking about sort of if, buts, maybes. And I think the realism and sort of the realistic approach to this is that Perez probably won't be winning this race. But the thing that he needs to be is a wingman at this point in the season. He does need to be Max's wingman. He needs to be up there, you know, every single race, like he kind of was in the US, getting that, you know, other place on the podium. And, you know, where else better to do it than your home Grand Prix? Really, you know, show Red Bull, you know, why he's there, why he's in that seat. Because Red Bull need it. They're behind in the Constructors' Championship. They're going to need to close that gap to Mercedes before the end of the season. And, you know, a good result at his home race could do a huge amount of to Checo's confidence as the season comes to a close. It'll be interesting to see how he does, but the most important thing is he needs to be up there qualifying first or second row, because it's such a long straight down into turn one, such a long run. He needs to be make sure he's in that battle and he's there to pick up pieces and take places off the Mercedes drivers.
Yeah, I think that's an important point you make, that he needs to be there to take points off Mercedes. I think that's almost half his role. Next, we're going to move on to Lando Norris. It's been a sort of, he didn't have such a good performance in the USA. And we'll move to you, Ray. Do you think that's going to be replicated in Mexico? Obviously, the Mercedes engine doesn't deal with the high altitude so well as the Red Bull engine. But bearing in mind they're fighting with Ferrari, do you reckon that's going to be a benefit to them, or do you think they're going to maybe struggle to get past the Ferraris as they did in the USA?
I'm thinking that Ferrari might have the advantage, because I think if you think about it, Mercedes have trouble in Mexico. They have a history of this, being not doing so well in Mexico. And I think Ferrari's new power unit upgrade has really done a lot to put Ferrari ahead. I know it's for one in Cota, they are believed to have run lower wing angles to help them on the straights based on the data we can see. But I think the upgrades should be enough to help Ferrari, beat McLaren. And unfortunately, Lando's race last time out wasn't that good in the US, but I think he could bounce back. It's probably just one of these, blips, where he doesn't perform so well compared to Daniel Ricciardo. I think Ricciardo has done fantastic so far, considering how he wasn't doing so well at the start of the season. It's a brilliant recovery. And I think it could be very exciting in the battle for third, but I'm putting my money on Ferrari, just being faster than McLaren here in Mexico.
I couldn't find the unmute button there. To be honest, I think there's weight to what you say there. Because the Charles Leclerc is not far behind. Well, he's fairly far behind him in the points, but that could obviously change with the higher altitudes. The only reason I say that is that obviously for the Ferrari is designed. It's still sort of working around the constraints of the initial sort of dragging design that when they designed it around the more powerful power unit that they had. Do you think maybe sort of that will help Ferrari almost being in a obviously they're going to be very, very high up. That's something that we talk about with the upcoming two Latin American races, Tom. Do you reckon that sort of will favour them almost and really sort of close up the gap, or is it going to be sort of go almost the other way in some ways?
Well, I think I think with the characteristics of the Hermanos Rodriguez circuit, we'll see that I think it will probably suit McLaren slightly more than Ferrari, in my opinion, because the changes to the Ferrari PU have not necessarily been part of the overall power. It's all to do with other elements of the power unit, to do with deployment and drivability of the car. So it's a big upgrade for Ferrari, but it's not put them on a par engine wise. And what we've seen generally is the high speed circuits, McLaren have looked strong. You've got the long straights at Russia, and you've got Monza, you've got other races earlier in the season where Norris was performing very well. So I'd like to think that McLaren will be slightly in the ascendancy in this race, but you just can't tell, because over the season we've seen so many swings, and we've seen teams perform at tracks where they just doesn't look like they should have performed, and teams and times when you thought they're nailed on for good performances and they haven't. So it's hard to say, but part of me thinks that this race is going to be. It's going to be tight between the Ferrari and the McLarens. I think that they'll be quite evenly matched, but if for this race, but I think the Ferrari generally has the better package now. So moving forwards for the rest of the season, it's going to be tough for McLaren to overcome Ferrari. There's not that much between them. Lando will be looking to try and hold on to that fifth place in the championship from Leclerc, and everyone's saying earlier in the season he could finish third, and now it looks like he might end up finishing sixth, which is or even potentially he could even finish behind Carlos Sainz, who's not that far back. So there's it just depends how strong this Ferrari power unit turns out to be in the closing stages of the season. We know they tend to go well at Abu Dhabi as well, so And there's just too many unknowns as well with the upcoming races in Saudi Arabia and Qatar. We just don't know, which is what's making the finale of the season just absolutely fantastic. And I cannot wait to see what happens. It's two supposedly Red Bull tracks, a track that's supposedly Mercedes, yet Red Bull won there last year, and then two tracks we just don't know. So it's going to be fabulous, and I can't wait to see what happens there. But for me, I think it's slightly on McLaren's side right now over Ferrari for this weekend. But if you ask me now, I would say Ferrari the advantage towards the end of the season.
Yeah, 100%. It's almost it's going down as one for the ages, not just up front, but down the entire grid. I've just looked, and it's 3.5-4 points between Ferrari and McLaren in the constructors, and that's honestly going to bring, I think, the next two drivers into play, sort of beautifully. Obviously, Carlos Sainz isn't that far behind, and some solid points finishes could come his way, Louis. So, he could find himself climbing up the championship order and really putting McLaren in a tough spot.
Yeah, I think Carlos Sainz has been weirdly underrated this season. He's really put in some great drives for Ferrari. And as this Ferrari has been getting better over the course of the season, so has Carlos Sainz. He's really, shown what he's, just how good of a driver he is. And as you say, he is going to play a crucial part. Him and Leclerc are such a deadly duo. They're both getting the most out of that Ferrari. They're both doing really well. And the same can't be said for McLaren at the moment. We've had Daniel Ricciardo just not quite on it, and then have these sort of races like we saw in the US where Lando wasn't wasn't the sort of the same Lando we're used to seeing. So when you've got, two drivers doing so well and two, drivers on another team who are very up and down in their form, you can see how this, season could favour Ferrari as it comes to a close. But for Carlos Sainz, I'm more than hopeful to see what he can do. I think he will do a good job, and I think he's going to continue to show the good performances that we've seen from him. And honestly, him and Leclerc at the moment are doing such a good job that I would find it hard to argue against Ferrari. Maybe overcoming McLaren this weekend, despite maybe not having quite that edge that they need to beat them on sort of outright pace.
Yeah, it's kind of a sort of some of it is great, yeah, greater than the sum of its parts. Sorry, sort of story with Ferrari at times. I feel like we've then got the second McLaren driver, Ricciardo, and he's in a similar position to Sainz, who's just ahead of him. Obviously, quite 17 and a half points ahead of him in the championship. It seemed almost as though he's kind of flitted between being really great, really attuned with the car, halfway through the season, and then sort of a new hurdle will pop up where it's in a scenario that he doesn't seem to be able to sort of get his head around. But he got a fifth place in the USA. Do you reckon he can carry on that strong momentum into Mexico, Ray?
I'm thinking, yeah, he should. In fact, I actually hope he carries that momentum forward, because it was a very slow start of the season for him. And I think since Monza, or rather, actually, even I think since the low point in Monaco, he has improved significantly. And for McLaren, I think it's vital that, he continues at this form. And because I think, like we said earlier, McLaren haven't exactly been the most consistent team. And it's really beneficial for them in the constructors, because I think it's fair to say that McLaren did extend the development time for the 2021 car all the way to, I think it was June or August, unlike Ferrari, who stopped around 2 months earlier than them. So they are somewhat sacrificing 2022 for 2021 here. So if McLaren can't get both drivers to be driving at their very best, it's going to cost them a lot, not just in the short term, but also in the long term. So yeah, I really hope that McLaren, yeah, both drivers get their act together and actually drive well, because I think the team needs it.
Yeah, 100%. It seems like it's going to come down to drivers rather than the car at the end of this season. Next, we move on to someone who was out, just completely put out of the the United States Grand Prix with a non-classification. Pierre Gasly, he's down in ninth in the championship, Tom. You know, obviously he's going to want to bounce back from that. Do you see it as almost an AlphaTauri sort of race to kind of make a snipe, you know, get some points off maybe people that they're not intended to be fighting with, who should be further up the grid but are maybe disadvantaged?
Yeah, I think we've seen a bit of a turnaround with AlphaTauri and not so much Gasly this weekend, but I think last week was it this podcast I might, I can't remember now, but I was on a podcast talking about how Alpine looked like they've now taken the ascendancy in this fight in the Constructors' Championship between themselves and AlphaTauri for fifth place. But after 1 week, just 2 points from Yuki Tsunoda, and they seem to be back in the fight now, and Alpine seem to be flailing. So Gasly, where he is in the driver standings there, he's not going to go anywhere. He's kind of nailed on ninth place. He needs to find the motivation to push on. He's very unlikely to catch Daniel Ricciardo in eighth, and Fernando Alonso is not likely to catch him in 10th. So it's just finding that motivation to pick up as many points as possible for the team, because he's got the fifth for quickest car, and that car should be finishing fifth in the Constructors' Championship without a shadow of a doubt. So ninth place for him is exactly where he should be. It's his teammate that's been the issue, but hopefully he's turned the corner now, and 54 points behind his teammate, he's never going to catch him, but hopefully he can turn in some good performances for AlphaTauri and push forwards. But Gasly, yeah, it's such a difficult job for Gasly between now and the end of the season, because he's kind of in that mid-ground. He's got nothing really to fight for. He's comprehensively beaten his teammate. He knows he's not going to be in a better car next year. He's got a new deal. He's got literally nothing to fight for. So it's where he finds that motivation to pick up from. I mean, I suppose, you know, driving a fast car around a race circuit and being paid millions should be motivation enough. So hopefully he can find the motivation from that way. But you just don't know where that edge comes from, that last nth of a percent to push and get that second place out of nowhere or something like that. I mean, he got second here last time. Sorry, that was Brazil, wasn't it? He got second in Brazil last year when there was nothing to fight for. So he's definitely got... He should be pushing forwards and trying to get the result for the team here. But yeah, it's a very difficult position for him. So it's going to be interesting to see what he comes up with. That's it really for Pierre. It's difficult to talk about him really.
Yeah, it's quite nice when you've got, you know, when you can just sort of relax and, you know, you've beaten everyone that you actually need to, and it's just kind of, you know, just a nice run into the end of the season. Must be quite nice. I don't imagine a lot of drivers have that. After that, we've got Fernando Alonso, who can apparently just overtake off the track if he's allowed to, or if the sporting director at F Alpine is anyone to go by. They are 10 points ahead of AlphaTauri. I can't remember Alonso. Alonso would have raced at the Autodromo at Mexico, wouldn't he? I don't really know what to say about him, but I think he needs to go forward, doesn't he, Louis? He needs to really take the fight, because honestly, 10 points is something that could be, you know, flipped in a heartbeat. And if AlphaTauri starts scoring, you know, they really need the position in the Constructors' Championship.
Yeah, I think it's something that really needs to be nailed into both the Alpine drivers. If anything, you know, they really need to start being more consistent, being better, you know, just getting points. You know, we've seen it, just Alpine, just they have their moments. That Alpine have been largely disappointing from what we really expected from them this season, and then they have these breakout moments. Fernando Alonso has a moment of brilliance, Ocon has his moments of brilliance. And we're all praising Alpine, going, you know what, maybe now they've got it right. Maybe they've now, you know, unlocked something with their car to push forward. But then they kind of regress, and now they've allowed, you know, AlphaTauri to, you know, to come back and be a threat once again. You know, for Alpine, AlphaTauri should not be considered a threat. You know, they're a manufactured team. They should be, you know, they should be up there, but it just hasn't worked. And for Fernando Alonso, you know, he's a veteran, and he's doing the best I think that he can, but age, you know, is possibly, you know, holding him him back somewhat in allowing Alpine to go forward. So I think for Fernando, he's got to push forward. I think that's obvious. I think Alpine is a team, and I think Esteban Ocon, they all need to start really knuckling down, because as you said, 10 points is not a lot, and it can swing, and we've still got plenty of races left for AlphaTauri to take those points and to close that gap. But all it really takes is one really good sort of haul of points from Alpine, and it could potentially take it out of reach for AlphaTauri. So it's still plenty to fight for, but both drivers really need to be on their A game.
Yeah, they do need to be on their A game. Obviously, double retirement last weekend, which is honestly the worst thing you can have, and it's probably what's brought AlphaTauri back into the fight, where they may not have been. So it's not all bleak, but Ocon, obviously, Ocon needs to be on it, doesn't he, Ray?
Agreed. I mean, if you look at the points-wise, he's actually behind Fernando, and Fernando is actually, he hasn't raced in Formula 1 for 2 years. And yes, I know Ocon is back in F1 last year after a one-year hiatus with Mercedes. But he should be performing better. And if you think about it, the gap between Alonso and Ocon will actually be a lot bigger if Ocon hadn't secured that critical win in Hungary. Because as it stands now, the points gap between them is, I think, 12 points. But then, first place gives you 25 points. And if I'm not wrong, second place gives you 18 points. So if he didn't win, that gap is going to be a lot bigger, and he really shouldn't be losing to Alonso, especially, by this kind of points margin at all. In fact, I'll argue that with that win, he should be ahead of Alonso, even if you take into account the fact that, Alonso isn't exactly, maybe Alonso isn't that, familiar with the current breed of cars, because it's some time since Alonso just raced a Formula 1 car, which was in 2018. So, yeah, he definitely needs to buck it up, I think, Ocon, a lot, if he wants to, stay at Alpine beyond his current contract. Because I think, if you think about it, if I were Alpine, I gave Ocon an extended contract, but he's not doing so well compared to my driver that just came. It is supposedly a rookie. Did I really sign the correct driver? Or, should I have signed someone else from my junior program? Because we have Oscar Piastri, who is currently not having a seat in Formula 1. That's what I'll be thinking about Alpine.
Yeah, we'd start raising questions at Enstone's head office. Do we really want this guy in if maybe there's more promising prospects on the horizon? Next, we've got Sebastian Vettel in the wars last weekend, I believe, but still managed to claw a point out of it. They need to be doing better than that, don't they? Don't they, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, starting at the back didn't help, obviously, with the engine penalties, but his drive wasn't exactly spectacular. He had a couple of cars crashing out in front of him. He had three retirements, and then in the end, he only really passed the Williams, the Alphas, and the Hasses. So it took Kimi Raikkonen just basically trying to screw me over my bold prediction of Kimi getting points for him to actually finish in the points himself. So I still haven't forgiven Kimi for that. But yeah, he goes well at Mexico. So hopefully he will come back. He probably should have won here a couple of years back. He has won here before, and he's had a couple of he hasn't won here. He's had a couple of seconds and a fourth and a fifth, I think. And then once he retired, I think he got took out. So but he should have won here at least once. He does go well here. It tends to suit him. As hit for his driving style as well, so hopefully he can pull forwards. But the Aston Martin, just I don't know what's happened to that. Well, I mean, the car's not been good all year, to be fair. But that operation, in general, they always fight above their weight. They've always made good use of a car. But ever since the Bond villain has come in and he's tried to kind of put a different way of thinking on there, apparently it's not a nice place to work anymore, and there's been a revolving door of team members coming and leaving. He puts out all this positive spin saying all these top people want to join us, but yes, they have increased their headcount massively, but a lot of the key personnel who have been there since the beginning have gone. So it's not about taking a taking a good midfield team and making them better. He's kind of creating a whole new team, and that is going to have inherent problems. And the design concept of just copying the Mercedes, and yeah, great for one season, but look, now you've got to design your own car and you've thrown out your aero philosophy, so you've got to start again. It's not going to happen overnight. He's expecting to win races and win championships in the next few years. I would be surprised if they're when the new rule set comes in, I'll be surprised if they're going to be competitive. I think they're probably going to be that kind of fourth, fifth place for a couple of years, and have to build up slowly. And I'm sure they'll get there in the end, because you throw enough money at something and the right people. And he's obviously a very successful businessman who's driven. He'll get the right people in and they will improve. But I can't see it happening in the next few years. And I can't see it happening whilst Vettel is there. I can't see Vettel sticking around Formula One for like three or four more years and continuing to do what he's doing. And I just think he'll just get bored and just say Aster and go, and that's it. But with regards to this weekend, he's got, again, similar situation. He's not got a lot to fight for. He can potentially pass Esteban Ocon if he has a good points haul. He needs to beat his teammate. He needs to beat Stroll. I mean, being thrown out of second place in one race hasn't helped as well, but he needs to comprehensively beat Lance Stroll, or, you know, his credibility as a full-time world champion is well and truly gone. No offense to Lance Stroll, who's, you know, he's proven now he's a decent driver with enough practice, someone who has got the reputation of Sebastian Vettel needs to be putting Lance Stroll away comfortably over the course of a season, which he hasn't realistically done this year. So he needs a big result, and I think, you know, Mexico is as good a place as any, as he has shown a lot of promise here in the past, but he needs that good result between now and the end of the season. But I just can't see it coming the way that Aston Martin's performing.
Yeah, it definitely seems that you know, the ship is definitely still turning. You know, that's what Lance, that's very what I can't remember his name now. I can't remember what Stroll the Elder is called.
Lawrence,
that's what it is. I honestly, I was drawing a blank. I had no idea.
Just call him Blofeld.
Yeah. God. I've got all kinds of comments that I can't say running through my head now. We've got Stroll the Younger up next. I don't really know what to say about him, really. You know, he's clearly gone into a solid F1 driver, but you know, as Tom said, he shouldn't be as close as he is. So I guess that's actually kind of a good thing, almost, Louis.
Yeah, it is a good thing. I mean, it is. You know, as Tom mentioned, you know, Stroll has now developed into a good driver. You know, I think Racing Point could have done with this Lance Stroll maybe a couple of years ago. It might have given them a better fighting chance, especially in the Constructors' Championship. But I think he's just working with the equipment that he's got, and it's quite obvious that the equipment isn't particularly good. It hasn't been good since the start of the season. They were all complaining, you know, that the rules affected them the most, and all we heard from Lawrence and Otmar Szafnár was just, oh, these rules are made to, you know, do this to us and do that to us, and like put us on the back foot. It's like, well, if you don't design your own car, you're not going to know what to do with it when the rules change. So I think it just comes back to sort of bite them. I think for Stroll, he's just got to weigh out the rest of the season. If he can beat Vettel, I think that'll be a big, you know, achievement for him, a big bit of confidence going, you know, into future years. But he just needs to beat Vettel. I think that's, you know, score points, beat Vettel, you know, from now until the end of the season. And it could, you know, spark something new if Aston Martin, by some miracle, have a competitive car next year.
Yeah, it's a good point you make that they apparently Aston Martin's Q department can't manage to get things to the front of the grid and are still complaining about the rule changes affecting their car, when Mercedes have gone and done something with something incredible by comparison. Yeah, if the difference in performance is to be believed. We've then got Yuki Tsunoda down in 14th place. It's almost, you know, he's had a rough season. It's been a bit of a roller coaster for Yuki, and it's been a bit of trial by fire, Ray. But, you know, bearing in mind, he's had actually some, apparently some coaching, I believe, off Alex Albon, of all people. He's doing, I think he's doing quite well in the DTM, I seem to remember. But, yeah, it's, you know, it's where he is sort of belies how he's been doing. And he seems to almost be on the ascendancy, I think. Do you sort of agree with that? Or?
Yeah, Owen, I think, you know, Tsunoda has done a fantastic job, though. I think when he first came into Formula One, I think we weren't really realistic with his expectations because he did a single year of Formula Two, and before that he just did 1 year of F3. Before that, a year of F3, he was just racing in Japan, so he doesn't really have the kind of experience for the European style tracks that other drivers have, because most other drivers on the grid all start from Formula Four in Europe. He didn't, so there's always that learning curve, and apart from Bahrain aside, you know, it was really a baptism of fire for him. He was crashing on multiple occasions. And yeah, of course, you know, there was also his radio. But then I think he's done pretty well to turn things around. And I think he definitely could, you know, be improving across the season. And hopefully he'll be able to carry this form across, because I think Red Bull are not going to allow him to, you know, carry on for a third year if he's going to produce his kind of results for the second year. So yeah, I think it's kind of like Alex Albon situation again, where, you know, Red Bull will give him some time, but it's not going to be a lot of time. So he has to, you know, start to turn the ship around, and to his credit, he has started to do that, but he needs to ensure that it's a consistent turnaround and not a yo-yo form where one race is good and one race is bad, which is kind of what he had earlier in the season, if you think about it.
Yeah, he definitely needs to find some form and stick with it, and hope it continues, or at least be solid, so he can be getting good points finishes. Because as we mentioned before, you know, the fight with Alpine is still on, and it's got an awful lot closer. We're moving down to the bad bit of the grid that we don't really like talking about, and underneath we've got down below in the 15th we've got George Russell. It's George Russell. I feel like it's not a stretch to say that he's going to give it his all and give us an absolutely brilliant performance, Tom.
Well, yeah, he'll absolutely outperform the car, if that's at all possible. It's actually not possible, but he'll perform with the car to the maximum level of its ability, and Latifi will get somewhere near that. I can't see him progressing and getting points now. I think Williams have well and truly checked out for the season now. They've got eighth place basically in the bag. He's sitting there on 16 points, four behind Tsunoda. It's unlikely he's going to get four more points between now and the end of the season, and Tsunoda appears to be now on that positive trajectory. So I can't see him moving any higher. 15th, though, given the car that he's got, is a massive achievement for the season, to be ahead of both Alfa Romeos, all three Alfa Romeos actually, technically, and the two Haas cars. So that's an impressive haul for the season, given the car that they've got. So it's a similar situation to what I was saying before, where there's no real motivation to push forward now. He's got the drive, he's got nothing left to prove. But he can drive with that freedom that he hasn't had before. But it's going to take a situation like rain or a well-timed safety car for him to be in a position to do anything in this race. Realistically, the Williams now, as I said, I think they're fully focusing on 22 and that big chance they've got to at least join the midfield, as opposed to being off the back of the midfield like they are at the moment. I can't see them being in a situation where they're going to be, you know, getting podiums next season, but they can certainly bridge that gap and be in the Alpine Aston Martin AlphaTauri fight next season, which has got to be their target. Or why are they here, realistically? You know, if they can't take advantage of a big rule set, why are they even here in the first place? So he's not really got a lot of experience at this track. Obviously he raced here in Formula 2, raced here in Formula 3 as well, and just the one race here in 2019, which he was a couple of laps down, no doubt, and we already know he wouldn't have scored points in that race. So yeah, it's a bit of a nothing story for Williams really this weekend. Just hope he keeps his nose clean and puts in a good performance, and, you know, keeps everyone rooting for him, because we all love to cheer for George.
Yeah, 100%. There's quite a lot of people in the George Russell fan club on this podcast, which means it kind of overshadows the next driver, Latifi, Nicholas Latifi, sorry. And you kind of feel like, you know, Tom just mentioned it, you know, it's not much in it for Williams this season. They're seeing out the races, you know, just fulfilling those contract obligations at this point. You know, there might be the opportunity to steal a point, Louis, or, you know, if there's a crazy race, or, you know, the fact that there's just a big long straight. Do you think they can do that? I mean, do you think they can beat the Alphas? Because that's the only people they really need to beat, because the Haas are given.
Given Alfa Romeo have their moments, but those are very few and far between. It's more than possible for Williams to beat the Alphas. And, you know, I think people are starting to put a bit more respect on Latifi's name. He's getting there. He didn't have a great first season. He's not particularly, like, in general terms of Formula One, he's not had an amazing season this year, but at least there has been sort of steady improvement, and you can't really question his sort of spot at Williams too much. But what can you really say about what he's going to do for the rest of the season? Because let's face it, he's probably not going to score any more points. He is going to be lingering around at the back, beating the Haas is, that's pretty easy this season. Alfa Romeo's it's a little bit more tricky, but I think, you know, as long as they keep doing that, it, you know, stops Alfa Romeo scoring any points and threatening whatever threat they could in the Constructors' Championship for Williams. But for Latifi, I think just keep doing what he's doing, see out the end of the season and see what happens next.
Yeah, it's about it, really. Someone I think is just seeing out the rest of the season is Kimi Raikkonen. You know, he had a nice battle on track with Alonso in the last race, Ray. But beyond that, you know, you can almost tell that Kimi Raikkonen really doesn't care anymore.
Definitely. I mean, Kimi, you know, it's retirement after Abu Dhabi. So to him, he's just driving for fun now. And there isn't really much in it for him because, I mean, if you think about it, Alfa Romeo don't exactly have the best car. And, in terms of race operations, they haven't exactly done a spectacular job. They've shot themselves in the foot on several occasions this year. And, I think he's doing a pretty good job, you know, in the sense that, okay, maybe USA wasn't so good because, you know, I was like, okay, maybe Alfa Romeo is going to score points. But no, he spun. And, it was pretty disappointing. But I think for now, you know, this is probably the best. He's just driving, you know, for the fun of it. There's not really much in there for him. He can't really win races. His podiums aren't really exactly, you know, coming. And points, neither are points. So I think he's just, you know, it's just going to be, it'll be a bit sad, you know, to see him end his season, you know, just the current amount of points he has. I think he has six points. It's going to be pretty sad, but I think, you know, this is the best we can hope for, you know, considering the package, you know, Alfa Romeo have, and, you know, the operations department. It's pretty much the best we can hope.
Yeah, 100%. Someone who doesn't have the luxury of being able to just drive, you know, just go about and see it, and, you know, just do the last five for Formula One races under no pressure, or, you know, someone who might have only five Formula One races left is Giovinazzi. You know, it's kind of getting to the point where he needs to start putting in some big performances or just something to show that he's still kicking and he's still worthy of having around, because I don't believe his seat's been confirmed for next year, Tom.
No, it hasn't. And the reason it's not been confirmed is because we didn't know what's going on with the Andretti potential takeover and whether that could potentially be Colton Herter in that position. From what I hear, it sounds like that deal's not going to happen now. I think AlphaSauber didn't have to sell, so they were holding out for more money, and Andretti doesn't have enough of it, apparently. So I think that's, which is a bit of a shame. I think that would have been quite nice to see. It would have been good for the sport to have an American team owner and obviously an American driver in there as well. Colton Herter's a strong driver, and he's a good prospect. and just 22 as well, so he's still got time on his side. So it would have been good to see him have a crack at Formula One. He's definitely got the talent, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen now. And I've got this horrible feeling that after me actually getting quite excited about Alfa Romeo for once, I think that it may well end up being Giovinazzi is going to get confirmed, because it looks like this deal may be off, and instead of then it'll either be Guan Yu Zhou or Nyck de Vries or Giovinazzi. I've just got this horrible feeling it's going to be Giovinazzi again, and Italian Jesus is going to rise once again, not even on Easter Sunday this time. So what to say about his race for this weekend? He'll look fast at one point, probably in a practice session. They'll get all excited about it, and then he'll disappear in the race again. Probably end up finishing a few laps down. He'll probably have a fight with Fernando at some point, and then that'll be that. So yeah, nothing's going to happen. I can't even try and get excited about it anymore. So Giovinazzi, 1 point. That's probably what he'll finish the season on. But he'll still finish 18th and probably get a contract for next year as well. But that's it really for Giovinazzi, I'm afraid.
Yeah, cheeky little sniper Haas there. I liked it. Yeah, I guess the cynics among you may even think that maybe the Andretti deal was maybe engineered so that there just wouldn't be enough time to sign the contracts before the end of the season.
It's a good conspiracy theory. I like it.
Yeah, like, it starts off with absolutely no truth behind it. It's all good. We now get to move on to my favourite of the Haas drivers, but the bar is literally on the floor. It's Mick Schumacher. Do you think it's sort of, you know, this is going to be a... I can't remember who... He would have raced here in F2, wouldn't he, Louis? So it's, you know, was it a happy hunting ground then? And if it was, do you reckon he can continue that into next season?
Tom, you might have to be the one to tell me if he did race here in F2, because he wouldn't have raced here last year because of COVID, and I'm not...
Yeah, he did race here in F2, and he raced here in F3. No, it was European F3 he was in. So no, he raced here in F2 for one year, but I don't remember his result. I don't think he definitely wouldn't have won the feature race, because he hadn't won a feature race in F2 until his last year, his second year. So if he did win, it would have only been a sprint race, which I don't really rate the winners of the sprint races anyway. So yeah.
Yeah. You know, at least, okay, so that's he's got some experience of the track, be it 2 years ago in an F2 car. But, you know, for Mick, he's got it fairly easy, you know, for his first year. He's literally, the expectation for him is on the floor. No one expects him to do anything in any race. He's got a teammate which he could probably beat with his eyes closed. You know, in the last race in the US, Mick was only actually 20 seconds off lapping his teammate come the end of the race. So it's not really much of a struggle for him. I think for Mick, it's just every race is more learning, it's more data, it's more time in the car, more hours. And that's probably the best thing you could ask for, you know, in terms of a season of no expectation, just getting to grips with the car, with the sport, you know, with the way everything works. You know, Mick has never been someone who comes flying out the rafters in his first season. It's always taken him, you know, time. So, you know, coming into next season, he's going to be as prepared as possible, you know, with a year under his belt, and just hopefully not an angry Russian looking down on him, making him move out the way for his son.
Yeah, to be fair, I was going to actually compare the Haas to a 2019 Formula 2 car, but then I remembered that that's pretty unfair to the F2 car. I'm sorry, Ray, that you've ended up with the last guy on the grid. You know, he should not be named Egghead. We've got all the names for him. Do you see an amazing performance out of Nikita Mazepin?
I don't know. I mean, if you think about it, his race on Sunday, I likened it, you know, to more of, you know, having a Sunday stroll on Kota because of just how slow he was going. Although, of course, you know, we know he had to go in the, I think he had a pit in the first lap for, I think, some wing problem. So, you know, that's probably why he's slow. But, you know, his pace of this season has been pretty rubbish, if I'll be honest. His retirement rate, he has, I think, 4 races. And of course, you know, who can forget, you know, his, I think he holds the record for the shortest debut in Formula 1, you know, spinning on lap 1. And giving rise to the name, of course, Mazepin. And yeah, I mean, if you think about it, I think for this, for him, the same as me, it's just a learning season. So I'm not too sure how much he's learned, you know, based off his pace, or should I say lack thereof it. And yeah, there isn't really much to say. I don't think he's going to do anything special. He's, I think he's been comprehensively out-qualified. I'm not too sure about that. Can someone confirm that? Has he?
God.
I think he's had technically out-qualified Mick because Mick has either retired or not been able to compete in a qualifying session.
I see, I see. Well, that's not a merit, so I guess I'm going to disregard it. But yeah, I mean, I really don't see anything special coming out of him, you know, for this year. And I just hope for next year that Haas, you know, hopefully, you know, if they have a good car, you know, he won't be burdening Haas by crashing out on the first lap of every race.
Yeah, it's what do we even say? Let's move on. Like, moving swiftly on, we'll do our predictions. I will start with you, Tom.
Joy, what do you want from me?
Oh, let's go with a cheeky podium.
Okay, I think it's going to be. Well, this is more out of hope than expectation. To be honest, I think I'm going to say that the right thing for the championship happens, and we have a Hamilton win. The right thing for the fans happens, and we have a Perez second, and then I think we have a Valtteri Bottas holding off Max Verstappen to complete the podium. And that's why Perez is allowed to finish ahead of his teammates. So something happens in there, probably a cheeky safety car at the wrong time, screws Max Verstappen, Hamilton gets a bit of luck and holds off Perez for the win, Bottas holds off, does the job and holds off Verstappen for a podium.
That's nice, I like it.
It's good for the championship.
Yeah, good for the championship. Louis, what was your podium?
Well, I'm not going to go good for the championship, but more for good for the championship outcome that I want. And I think it's going to be Max Verstappen who wins. I think it's pretty easy. I'm going to put Lewis Hamilton second with fastest lap to make things a little less one-sided. And then I think Sergio Perez in third.
You're testing a friendship there. You're testing our friendship, Louis. And Ray, what podium do you predict?
I think I'm going to say the same answer as Louis, because, you know, I mean, you talk about the engine, you know, Mercedes hasn't exactly had the best time at Mexico, and like, yeah, we thought Mercedes had the faster car, you know, at like FP1 in Kota, but it turned out to be otherwise, and throughout the season I think Red Bull have had the faster car, so I'm just going to say Verstappen P1. Same as Louis. Maybe, you know, Checo would take the fastest lap, I guess. And I think, you know, since he can't win, because I think Red Bull will never allow him to win, even at his home race, I guess, you know, that is kind of the consolation prize in a sense for the Mexican fans.
Yeah. I agree with you. I don't think Red Bull are going to be the sort of people to throw away a championship if it looks like it's going their way in any capacity. They've been waiting long enough for theirs after Seb Vettel left. For me, I'm going to go really weird, and I'm going to go with, you know, I'm going to think a Perez win. I'm going to go for the Perez win, and then we're going to have Hamilton and then Verstappen behind that. I think it's going to be like just a weird safety car, and I know this is straying into bold prediction territory, but I can see that happening. You know, we'll go with a bold prediction as well. Your podium prediction was already pretty bold, Tom, but let's go with a bold prediction from there.
Okay, even bolder then. How about we have Nikita Mazepin moves off 21st in the championship? So there we go. He's going to finish 14th or higher and move ahead of Robert Kubica. So there you go. That's bold.
That is bold. It tripped me up actually when I was going down the list. I was just like, how is he behind?
14th place, I think it was. Yeah. Imagine being 21st in a 20 driver competition.
God, I don't want to. Louis, what's your bold prediction?
I was going to go sort of similar Nikita Mazepin sort of esque, you know, maybe he, you know, out qualifies Mick or, you know, beats him on track. But I think that's just going into the absurd. So I'm going to back my usual bold prediction of King Nicholas Latifi for points. Let's go.
And you, Ray?
I'm thinking I'm just going to go with my usual curse prediction of Alfa Romeo will score points.
Well, that's fair enough. I feel bad for Mick. I feel bad for Mick. He's, I think, let's have a look at the standings. I should have paid attention when I first went down. Apart from Kubica, who obviously can't score any points, he's the only driver that I still like that hasn't scored any. So I'm going to go with Mick Schumacher for just a point. A point would be lovely. That would be nice. So now you've heard gone from the sublime to the ridiculous in those predictions there. You'll know if you're watching live, as I said before, but if you are listening after the fact, we're now streaming the show live on YouTube and YouTube. So be sure to like our Facebook page and to subscribe to our YouTube channel, Formula One Grid Talk. Also ring the bell icon so that you're notified of future shows. We're available also on Verbal, as well as Amazon Music, YouTube, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, OmniStudio and Pocket Cast. Just search F1 Grid Talk. We have a large back catalogue of shows, over 145 episodes now, including interviews, that's plural, with Mario Isola. Sorry, he decided to come on twice. As well as retrospective pieces on Tyre Gates and Senna and and podcasts and a new watch along as well that we're trialing for every single race in this thrilling championship. And if you're still stuck with what to do between shows, I will leave it to my guests to say what they do and where you can find them. So I'll start with you, Louis.
So you can find me mostly on sportlightpro.com. I do some F1 and some football content on there. That's where most of my writing is. And also I'll be hosting the watch alongs on here. So if you want to watch them and join us for Mexico qualifying, feel free to.
Right, excellent. And Ray?
So you can find me on YouTube at my channel, Everready Motorsport. And I make videos about, well, pretty much random things, just about F1, usually around lost stars, you know, like, say, for example, Sergei Sorokin. And occasionally I do make videos about centering around, you know, Singapore, because I'm Singaporean. So around Singapore and motorsport and in general, yeah.
Okay, everyone, make sure you go to check that out. And Tom, where can we find you? I think it's fairly obvious, but
Yeah, well, any YouTube watchers, if you want to see more of me and Leo here, who's been annoying me for the last hour, then you can catch us at MonkeyCPod on the socials. We stream shows on YouTube, same as Grid Talk. It's myself and my colleague Carl, a bit more laid back, just two mates having a laugh, chatting about Formula One, some hot takes in there, some unpopular opinions, and come along and just interact with us and have fun with us, really.
It's a good show. I've listened to the most recent one because I just don't like Tom.
Yeah, I wasn't on the last one, so
maybe go one before that. No, they're all excellent. And if you, I don't know, want to look at Formula One through the weird internet lens filter that is those memes, just go on sportlightpro.com and you can see my sort of meme reviews of most races. It's a little bit difficult sometimes just with the timing and things like that, and obviously, you know, everyone's got work, so you know, I've not been on it as much as I should have done, but yeah, just take a look at those if you want to. That's sportlightpro.com. While you're on the internet, though, if you're doing that, you can check out our subreddit for F1 Grid Talk to give us suggestions for what we can do to improve the show, and perhaps subscribe to our Patreon for mics, lights, better recording equipment for our presenters, so maybe I can get rid of this sort of pile of stuff in the background, or at least hide it. We will be back next Saturday to give our analysis and reaction to the Mexico City Grand Prix qualifying, and I hope to see you all then. Thank you for listening/watching, and goodbye.